Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
What's up, everybody? It's been a while. I took some time out to chill with my family in New York. I also made a couple of good pod episodes while I was out there. We got my boy DJ Matteo DeFontaine, coming up pretty soon, as well as hip-hop legend DJ Premier. So it wasn't all fun and games. I was thinking of y'all, too, when I was hanging with my peoples. I also needed a time to round up the festival season with the Criminals, and if you follow me on Facebook, you know that we're back in the studio making it nice for you. A new record should be out, I'd say, like the beginning of the year, around that way. So I've been away from the pod for a minute, but I've been making some moves for you, so it should be good. We're hitting the ground running with a seriously inspirational guy this week. He's a Royal Marine Commando who was injured in the line of duty, now a triple amputee, and a wheelchair free. Check this. So whatever you do, you don't feel sorry for this guy. He can lift more than you. He can row harder than you. He can run faster than you. He can swim farther than you, yo. Which is a good deal because he's competing in the Invictus Games in Toronto starting this week on September 23rd. My guest this week is a veteran athlete, motivational speaker, and all-around awesome man, Mark Omrod. We spoke at a service station in Exeter. You know how we do. Huey off the record. We're keeping it real. We met kind of halfway for where we all are at. You'll also hear Mark's buddy, also a former Royal Marine Commando, Matthew Elliott, who is producing the upcoming documentary about Mark called No Limits. It's spelled L-I-M-B-I-T-S. Check me. I'll give you more details about that at the end, so stay tuned. And welcome, my peoples. Tune in, drop out, and get a little oorah in your day. So I'm here with Mark, and we were just talking about we're here at Exeter Services. Just give people a picture in their mind. Because the thing I like about podcasts is like people are driving or chilling, and like the two of us sitting at a services.
Yeah,
it's kind of cool with crying babies and shit. But we were also talking about we're near the, I guess, the recruit depot. Is that what you guys call it over here? Because we call it a recruit depot in America.
Its official title is the Commando Training Center, Royal Marines. Okay. It's in Limpston, and this is where for the last, I don't know, maybe 40, 50, maybe 60 years, all Royal Marines come to conduct their training. There's a place 10 miles away, Woodbury Common, which is the big common area where we do all the exercises. And, you know, conduct our training. So most of it is based around here in Exmouth and Devon. And occasionally we'll go off to other places, Wales, a place called Sennybridge, and, you know, around the country. But
get cold and wet and sandy.
Exactly. Right. But the bulk of it is here in sunny Devon.
Yeah, well, it's sunny today, man.
It is.
So I was talking before, there was a lovely little girl who was crying a little bit, but we were talking about how you became a Marine, what made you want to join.
Mm-hmm. So for me, I was about 15 and a half, coming up to the end of school. I had my GCSEs, my exams on the horizon, and just had this moment where I thought, no matter whether I do good or whether I do bad, come the end of these exams, I need to make a decision. Do I go on to further education, or do I join the real world and get a job? Now, I didn't dislike school. I did okay in my exams, but I kind of felt that I didn't want to go any further with it, and I wanted to join the real world and get a career. Now, even though I had made that decision, I didn't know exactly what I was wanting to do, so I kind of narrowed my options down. I knew I wanted to do something which in my mind was macho.
Yeah, yeah.
So I narrowed it down to the police, the fire brigade, or the military. Back then, you know, when I was 15, naively, I thought all firemen did was put out fires. I didn't know how much their job entailed, so it didn't really appeal to me, so I kind of, you know, scrubbed that one. The police didn't last very long because I didn't want to lose all my friends, so I kind of scrubbed from that one pretty quick. And so I thought, you know, I'm going to join the military. But again, being young and naive, for me, whenever you mention the military, straight away you think of the army. So I went down to the career centre, spoke to the guy down there, got all the information, came back and started the process. Because I was young, I had to get my parents to sign the form.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then my dad told me that I had an uncle who was a Royal Marine. And he only lived about 15 miles up the road, so halfway between where we are now and where I live.
Yeah.
So we jumped in the car one day, we went to meet him, he was a commissioned captain.
Right.
And I had a conversation with him. He told me a little bit about the Royal Marines and how they were different to the Army. I then went back to that career centre, spoke to the Royal Marine in charge. They showed me the recruitment video, and it just blew me away. I just looked at these bunch of men who could operate, you know, by foot, by sea, by air, in the Arctic, in the desert, in the jungle, in the woodland.
Yeah.
You know, they were like the ultimate flexible, all-round soldier. You know, and I thought, if I'm going to do it, I want to do it properly. I want to go through the hardest training I can go through and see what I'm capable of. And so I switched and decided to sign up for the Marines instead.
Yeah, but it's one of those things. Every time I talk to a Marine, it's kind of the same story. You know, my dad was a Marine, right? So for me, when I got to the point where I was going to join the military, I was like, well, I'll go join the Marines, see if I'm as tough as my dad. Because my dad died when I was young, so I didn't know him. So I was like, oh, I'll try to be as tough as him or whatever. So, like, the family thing is really key. Because a lot of times you could see, like, you know, dudes in their dress blues and, you know, whatever. But the thing is, when you have a family member say, like, fuck the Army. No offense. But, you know, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, a lot of great guys in the Army. A lot of great, you know, people. But the thing about the Marines is that it is that thing, I want to test myself to the limit, right? And that's kind of interesting that it's very similar with every Marine I ever run across, even Royal Marines, which is kind of interesting. Is it the same thing kind of with you?
The Marines.
Yeah.
My dad was Navy. Brother was Navy. Granddad was Navy. So forth.
I go to the Marines.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting. I mean, with what you're doing with the Invictus Games, man. Now, is it still kind of like inter-service rivalry? Because there's always been that, like Navy Marines, especially Army, especially Marines and Navy in America. Is that kind of like the way it goes there?
You know what's funny about this is, in the training camps, there's a little bit of that inter-service banter and rivalry, but it's all good fun.
Yeah.
But I think the overall feeling is, we're coming together as the UK team to compete against these other guys, and so we're one family, and now we're going to have that banter with the other countries.
Yeah,
you know, so it's nothing malicious, it's all good fun.
There was no disrespect, Mark, so I got to jump in there. I know Mark is taking it so fucking seriously. And we go to these training camps and the guys, you know, Mark's there, full on,
hardcore. Snorting protein off the table.
I remember when we first got, I was a grunt and we deployed to jump school, right, with my platoon. And we were at an army base, right? And it was the first time I actually saw that kind of stuff, right? And the thing I took from it was the same thing you said, man, where, it's kind of like, you know, there's a banter and stuff like that. And it might get to be a punch in an E-club somewhere, maybe, right? But most of the time, it's just kind of like, it's, you know, we're the team, but, you know, we're also the Marines, you know what I'm saying? But, especially when you're on another base, like, you have to kind of hold it down when you're an army base. Yep. Or if you're on a boat, if you're somewhere with the Navy or whatever. So with this, I guess No Limits is the title, right?
Yes.
With the documentary you put together. Now, it blew me away when I first saw it, right? Because the way you got close, especially the trailer, the first trailer you put out, it's like, you know, it takes everybody's breath away that I've shown it to, right? Now, it took you many, many years to get to that place physically, but mentally, were you kind of like always like, fuck this, you know?
Yeah, we were just having this conversation on the way out here, when we come out the services, about a lot of people kind of look at me, and some will feel sorry for me, but actually I'm very, very lucky. And when I woke up in hospital 3 days after being injured, my whole mindset was, fuck it, it's not going to change, it's just another challenge. And I kind of put on my head that I had when I first started my training, I thought, this is going to be tough, you know, it's going to push me, but it's achievable. And that's exactly, almost instantly when I woke up, that's was my mindset in hospital. You know, it's a challenge, I've got to rise to it. And I kind of felt, about 2 weeks into it, this pressure of you know, 300 plus years of the Royal Marines standards on my shoulder, and I had to uphold those standards no matter what my situation was, and that carried me through a lot of it, you know. So it was all, a lot of it was, it's all mindset.
I think mind over matter's pretty much a thing that, you know, as the older I get, is the thing that kind of gets me through a lot, right? And I guess I take it all the way back to when I was 17 and I first realized what self-discipline was, right? When you come out of the, what we call it, the world, right? It's kind of the same thing. You come out of the world, you go into the Marines, and then you realize that, oh, well, you know, it's all up here, man. Because they were like, you know, they're always the little tiny skinny guys that are taking everybody off, you know, running over that hill, like, come back, man, you know? And I think it's one of those things where if we can teach civilians, and I know this is kind of a weird thing for me, kind of, but civilians don't, a lot of times don't have that self-knowledge and the self-discipline because they haven't really had to trust themselves. You know what I mean? I talk about it a lot with, like, you know, young people when I talk to them. It's like, you have to trust yourself. I'm like, well, I don't know what I'm capable of yet. And that's the kind of thing where I'm like, oh, shit, well, I can't tell everybody to join the military, right? I can't tell everybody to, you know, try to, like, get in a situation where they have to trust their own self. I mean, have you talked to, I mean, I know you talked to a lot of people about this, and I'm sure you're probably more versed in it than I am. That's one of the reasons I want to talk to you. But what are the things that you can transfer from what you've kind of gone through in the military and the mindset to bring to, like, civilian people that are kind of, like, wishy-washy about stuff?
You do have to trust yourself, you're right. And you have to believe in yourself and have that, not arrogance, but that high level of self-confidence that you can go out and do the things that you want to do. You know, I was 17 as well when I joined the Marines. And I remember getting there. I live literally 40 minutes away from where we do our training, but I might as well be on the other side of the world. And I was a 17-year-old, and I jumped into a room with 62 men. I was the youngest one in there, and I felt homesick straight away, even though I was only 40 minutes away. And I thought, I'm not sure if I can do this. But then, as each day went by, my confidence grew, and I thought, you know what, I can do this, and I am going to do this. And by the time I'm 18, I'm going to have gone through the longest and hardest training in the world, and that's something I can be proud of. And when I did that, that changed my world. Because then I thought, well, no, actually, you can do pretty much anything. If you believe in yourself, and you concentrate on the right shit, and you just keep going. Keep going with it.
Now, what's the, when you say the right shit, you mean, like, kind of, especially when you're trying to put it in the civilian world, because we're dads, right? So we try to teach our kids stuff. And is it by example that you learned, like you saw the Marines that were older than you, that were, like, say, sergeants, NCOs, corporals, whatever, that got you on the track a lot of times when you got in the fleet?
I just, I have a mega strong belief, right? We're all born pretty much the same, except if you're unfortunate enough to be born with a disability or something. We're all born pretty much the same. So if I believe if one person can achieve something, there's no reason another person can't, if they copy, you know, the kind of the way that he did it. So, you know, if you want to be a billionaire, just spend your time studying billionaires and copy their mindset, copy their actions, and then you've got a much better chance of doing it. So when I see all these people around me who are Royal Marines, Lance Corporals, Corporals, Sergeants, Officers, whatever, I saw a bunch of people that have already done what I wanted to do. So, you know, it's possible. You just have to concentrate and focus on the right kind of stuff. So I would look around to people that are older than me, because I felt homesick and, you know, I was young, and I would kind of copy what they did to cope. And then I just broke it down into a process and took it week by week, day by day, and just thought, you know, because every 2 weeks we would be tested, and if you don't make the grade, you get put back a troop. So my thing then was just put that effort in for 2 weeks as hard as you can, and I kind of ramped it up every day, got to that 2 weeks past, took my foot off the gas, ramped it up again for the next, and just kept on breaking it down and breaking it down until eventually 30 weeks were gone. I did it.
That's sound advice. It's like eating an elephant, small bites, man.
Exactly. You know,
that's cool, man. I think a lot of people, I guess, are inspired by the fact that people don't really know what Marines do when they leave the country that they're from, right? When they go deploy where they're deployed, it's all kind of like a mystery, unless, of course, there's, like, something that happened at Sergeant Blackman, for instance, like he had a body cam or something like that, which is whatever. But when we all come back, I think we kind of feel this all the same thing. It's like, how lucky is everybody who lives here, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I guess to transfer that knowledge of how lucky they are to have this kind of freedoms and stuff like that is a barrier that I had to get by. I still kind of sometimes have to get by that barrier. But when you finally get past it and you start to kind of go, okay, I'm back here, I'm going to try to be inspirational. And when I know that you're talking about the Lance Corporals and the officers and the sergeants that inspired you. Now you're inspiring everybody that's coming up, right? And you talk about the responsibility and things like that. I know with the documentary, is that kind of like the idea behind it, to be, you know, respectfully inspirational? I mean, it's pretty heavy, man.
We just wanted to document, you know, my life. You know, we got social media now, yeah. So, you know, you can interact with people that you'll probably never meet in your life, and, you know, you can get a lot more involved. And I had people sending me messages over the years, saying they'd seen a little clip that I'd put on Facebook or an update that I did or something, maybe in the mainstream media. And it felt good that I was just living my life. I didn't go out with any intention to motivate or anything like that. I was just living my life and documenting it. Mm-hmm. And people got some real positive results from it. And I thought, well, this is a little taste of it. If we go big with this and put all the behind the scenes stuff in a documentary, that could help a lot of people, potentially, you know? Because I remember, God, nearly 10 years ago now, lying in that hospital bed with three limbs missing, having never met an amputee before, with a million questions in my mind, thinking, who do I ask these questions to? You know, and the hope is that this documentary will answer a lot of those questions. And, you know, there could be someone now sat there with all their limbs fully healthy, who in 12 months' time might get knocked off a motorbike and lose a limb, and this could help them.
Yeah, I think that's a cool way to look at it, where I suppose, you know, life's a journey, right? It's not a destination, right? And I think the fact that you were just living your life is a testament to a lot of people who eventually, if they get into a situation, like you said, like some get some motorcycle accident, whatever, and they find themselves in a life-changing situation, they can check out this doc and go, okay, well, that's the roadmap I can start taking, right? And I think that's fucking admirable, man. I think that's awesome. Now, you guys have been filming this thing for a minute, right? I mean, it's been, like, how many years have you been doing this?
Filming the documentary? Yeah. It's only this year, isn't it? We started this year.
All right, so officially, right? So are you going to go to the games and all that kind of stuff and do that? So tell me a little bit about the training thing, because I've been checking you out on Twitter, and it's a ball ache because I feel fucking lazy. I'm over here trying to do my push-ups like, Jesus.
So I have never done this before, ever. My main goal when I first got injured was to leave my wheelchair behind and not use it for as many years as possible. And the last time we used it was the 9th of June 2009. A lot of the other guys jumped into sports, and then obviously I had children and family, and I had a new job, new career, so that all kind of overshadowed my life, and I didn't ever get into these sports, and they weren't sports that I was interested in. You know, before I was injured, I was a boxer for the Marines. I'd Thai box, kickbox, never liked football, never liked rugby, didn't like athletics, anything like that, so it didn't interest me, so I left it. And then this year on Christmas Eve is my 10 year anniversary, what we call the bangiversary. From getting blown up.
Damn. But that, yeah, I gotta like, I like the fact that all Marines are pretty much the same, aren't we? We're just like making fun of shit all the time.
I can't remember exactly when it was, but it was some point this year. I was just kind of sat down reflecting, and I had this sort of mental image of a jigsaw puzzle, and there was a piece missing from it, and it was sport. You know, I'd done the family, the career, everything was in place except sport. So I thought, I'm going to get into some things, and I'd done some stuff lightly in the background. I'd hand cycled a little bit before, and I tried a few of these sports, but nothing really excited me. And then I'd seen 2 years of the games, and I saw a lot of my friends going out and doing some really incredible stuff. And I had a better understanding of actually how difficult it was, because I had this preconception of, you know, disabled sports being more of a sympathy thing, where if you can...
Yeah, like, I know people think of it that way a lot of times.
If you can hand cycle a mile at some really slow pace or whatever, people think it's inspirational. And I thought, I don't want to be that guy that people pity. And then I got on a hand bike and I'm like, fuck, this is hard. So I thought, okay, let's just set some goals. My plan is to do this once and then never do it again. I just wanted to get that last piece of the jigsaw in place. Yeah. And then for me, it would top off a decade of being injured perfectly. I would have completed everything. So I did it and I started training, and I realised how hard it actually was. Rowing, I'd never sat on a rowing machine in my life, and it is horrible.
Yeah, it looks horrible.
Every session,
it looks horrible, man.
Nearly every session, I haven't properly thrown up yet, but I've done the whole dry retching thing.
Well, you should be used to that, man.
I know. The hand biking is just horrible. It's just lungs in my throat the entire time. And swimming, I didn't even learn to re-swim again until last year.
Really? Pretty quick, man.
Yeah. So now, it started off with let's do it, let's see what I can do and improve as a person. But now I've got competitive with it, and I'm like, let's do it, let's see who I can beat.
Yeah, yeah, let's win some
shit. Really push it, yeah. So
now, have you with your team, right? I used to have a bunch of branches of service, obviously. But do you guys have a Coast Guard here? Yeah, right?
Yeah.
So is it all five?
No.
Or is it just Army, Navy, Marine?
Our Coast Guard aren't really classed as military, are they? They're not really classed as a military here.
Not in America either. No offense, Americans.
Okay.
I have a friend of mine who used to be, I guess, a hard charger in the Coast Guard. He was like the drug interdiction guy.
Okay.
And I got to give them credit. They're running around with guns and shit trying to go after the narco dudes or whatever. So it's just Army, Navy, Marines, right?
And
Air Force, right?
Air Force. Yeah. Wow, yeah, that kind of series as well. No.
What's the Wi-Fi password?
Yeah, no, we do have all branches represented.
Now, with the different, I guess, the different sports, they're like, how many different sports are there? I'm not really too familiar with it.
Oh God, I think there's about 14 altogether.
So they're team sports, obviously, right? Like football.
You have there's volleyball, mm-hmm. Basketball, rugby, wheelchair rugby.
Okay. Don't want to be crazy with some Marines and some wheelchair rugby, all right?
I've not ever seen it, but I hear it's pretty brutal.
I can see Marines throwing wheelchairs on them dudes.
Yeah,
man.
You're sitting on the floor picking the chair and hitting each other. Yeah, but I've just been focusing on my ones really. But you know, you got the whole athletics thing with the running, long jump, that kind of stuff. Then you got the things like shot put, discus, archery.
That's like the old school joints.
Yeah, I mean, they've even got golf now. This year they've got golf, and there's I don't think it's an official sport at the minute, but they've got some sort of Land Rover driving challenge where you jump in a Land Rover and you race around a rally track. Yeah. So
sounds like my wife's kind of sport. So with your sports, what are the events that you're concentrating on?
So I will be rowing, swimming, and hand cycling.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's some heavy shit, man.
Yeah.
Now, I saw in the clip that you do running, right? You do like the blades running, right? Mm-hmm. Is that what they call them?
Yeah.
Because they can't say the dude's name anymore because he's just coming back, right?
Uh-huh. Gotcha. Yeah. I understand.
Now, with all the training that goes into it, I mean, you said you have a career and stuff like that. Do you get time off to train and stuff like that? Or are you just training on off times? Because we all got wives, man, and it ain't nice about us not being home with the kids. I know that.
It's both. I'm very fortunate. I work for a charity called the Royal Marines Association. Mm-hmm. They're based in Portsmouth. I live in Plymouth, so we're like 200 miles apart, but I work remotely. Mm-hmm. But they're very flexible with me and the stuff I do, because a lot of the stuff I do, like this at the games, mm-hmm. I'll be representing them. So, you know, so it all kind of intermingles, you know, my work and my other life and everything. So yeah, I'm fortunate in that way. But like today, you know, I've come up here, dropped the kids off this morning, come up here and do this, and I've got to go back. I've got some more meetings, so I won't be swimming until later on this evening, you know, back home. The kids will probably be in bed. These next couple of weeks leading up to the games have intensified a bit, so I'm away more than I was before. I was doing it in the mornings and fitting it around stuff. So my wife's very good. She understands all that. She's very supportive of it.
Yeah. So the support system is actually, you know, when you have like a good wife that's taking care of shit, you can't feel more supported. You know, that's the
it's crucial. You know, she doesn't ever moan about anything or whinge that I'm not here. I mean, when I'm not doing this, my job takes me away. You know, when I work as a speaker, I could be in Singapore, Germany, Holland, you know, London, wherever, and I'm away for 3, 4, 5 days. I think the last time I went away was 10 days solid on the road.
Wow.
I think I did about 1,500 miles. It was just going from city to city to city around the UK, speaking and doing the fundraising work and trying to train in between.
So is there a lot, I mean, with the games, right? I mean, obviously everybody knows that Prince Harry's idea. Is a lot of the money that's going into the team, great, it's Team GB, right? That's what you call it, right?
Yeah, I'm not... too up to speed on and all that kind of stuff.
I'm just saying like I mean that more, but like as far as like raising money for the teams, is that like a thing that you enjoy doing? You go and see people and talking to them?
Oh yeah, I love spreading the word, you know. And
I'm not saying Prince Harry's sitting there going, write your check, mate.
Write me a check.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, all the team, this whole Invictus Games thing goes a lot further than sport, I think. You know, a lot of the team are in schools now with their kit on, talking to children and trying to inspire and motivate kids about the benefits of sport. Because a lot of kids, you know, go through hard stuff as well. And sport can be a release from that, whether you're able-bodied or disabled or whatever. So it's a whole, it goes so much further than just turning up to Canada, competing, you know, maybe winning the medal. There's a whole legacy that comes along with this.
Now, the camaraderie within the Marine Corps kind of transfers to your Army buddies and all that kind of stuff and Navy dudes. But when you go to the games, right, have you been to the games before?
I've spent like an hour at the closing ceremony of the first London Games, and that's it.
So I imagine it's pretty much going to be a bunch of military dudes having a real good time, man.
Yeah.
Now, it's in Canada, right? So they got pretty relaxed laws as far as like drunk and disorderly, right?
Okay.
Where is it in Canada?
Toronto.
Oh, okay. Toronto's a good town, man. Yeah. I got a couple friends that are in U.S. Marines that are former Marines that are going up there to do some stuff. So
okay.
I'll give you a couple names.
Nice.
Man. A couple
okay.
dudes
okay.
you can run into, man.
Cool.
It's going to
go wrong very quickly.
Yeah, it'll go wrong.
Now, I did touch on before about a little bit about like civilians not really understanding what guys in the military do, and then especially when we come out of the service and we kind of have to fit back in, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you came out, obviously you had a lot of other stuff prioritized, right, that you wanted to do, but when you started getting back into like the socializing kind of thing, what's the thing that you probably end up saying more than anything else to civilians?
Saying to them?
Yeah, like they ask you about stuff, obviously, that's probably what happened, your injuries and things mm-hmm. like that, but when they say like, you know, when they say, what's it like being a Marine, what do you usually say to them?
I tell them, and it's my honest opinion, it's, to me, it's one of the best jobs in the world, you know, because like I say, I went in at 17. I tested myself as I was going from a boy to a man, and that changed my life mentally, knowing what I was capable of. I had and still do have an incredible circle of friends that, you know, grows to this day, and it's a very unique group of friends. You know that from your guys in the US Marines. The opportunities are pretty much endless. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want to do sport, if you go in without much of an education, you can get one in there. You get to travel the world. Like I say, you operate all over the world, again, testing yourself, seeing if you can survive in the Arctic, in the jungle, in the woodland, you know, and if you are proactive, your career progression will be really good as well. And you can just become, for me, it was about just becoming a all-round kind of person and just developing all the skills mentally, physically, and my qualifications and what I could do.
Yeah, I was talking to a bunch of kids, I guess, they were like teenagers, right? I was talking to them about a little bit about, I guess, the opportunities that I had, not just, you know, I guess more mental opportunities, like become worldly.
Mm.
You know, you're 17, 18 years old. I enlisted at 17 too, so it's like you're seeing other countries for the first time. You're seeing your own country for the first time sometimes. I mean, I went to California and 29 palms. I was like, wow, palm trees, man.
Yep.
But that does something to you, a young person, right? And especially the kids I was talking to, they were like 17, and I guess they were kind of like, I guess, suburban, for lack of a better term, right? And you could see that that's what they needed. Like, that's what they, you could see it was just like giving a little drop of water to the desert. They're like, wow, that's wow, just zapping their heads like that. And I was always kind of thinking, remember National Service? They used to have the thing you sign up.
Yeah.
Do you think that's a good idea for, not like, you know, because Israel does it for, what, 6 months or whatever? You got to join the IDF for 6 months, and then you can stay, you can leave. But I think just boot camp will help a lot of these little young motherfuckers out. You know what I'm saying?
I completely agree. You know, 12 months, you know, in there, discipline them, you know, give them some direction, some focus, teach them a little bit about what the real world's like. Because you get all these little, you know, punks running around, you know, thinking they're thugs and gangsters and terrorists.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
People, you know, some of them are like 21 years old, and I think by the time I was 21, I've been to war, I've been to Iraq, I've passed Royal Marines training, I travelled the world, and you know, they're running around causing trouble in McDonald's thinking that they're tough guys, and they need an education. So 12 months, even if it was a part-time thing, you know, they had to commit to a weekend a month or something.
It's like your reservist kind of thing,
right? Yeah, yeah.
But they have to go through initial recruit training or like you know, boot camp. Maybe people know
so that. Just to really put them out of that comfort zone and kick them in the ass and toughen them up a bit and open their mind.
I think exactly. I think a lot of things will happen if they do that. But why do you think they don't do it? Is it because everybody's just so politically correct now? They don't want
to. The world's
like,
too soft. Yeah. Nowadays the world is too soft and everyone is wrapped in cotton wool and it's too PC and you know you can't be seen to be doing this and to be doing that because you know someone's going to say you're a bad person. Hello, mate. How you doing? You alright? Yeah, good. Yeah. You alright? I'm going to come see you soon, mate. I was going to send Becky down to see you. Just got to get a few bits for the house.
I guess you see a lot of this with just, I mean, I'd say probably in the last like 20 years since the advent of the internet, that I guess we just see more of the world and you see it just being really soft, like you said, man. And I, you know, we got kids, man. I don't want to displace reality from them. Obviously, if they're babies, you kind of have to. But when they get older, you kind of have to show them what the world's like because the idea is you're trying to build a productive human being, right? And I definitely think that the national service thing, because it's in the United States, you have to sign up for national service at 18 or something like that, right? And I remember when it was time for me to sign up for it, I was already in, but I got the letter, which is kind of ironic that I was already serving, and I got this letter to sign up, and I was like, but I remember talking to some friends about like, oh, I'd never do that, and I was like, why? What else are you doing right now? I mean, these guys didn't go to college and stuff like that. I didn't go to college, but they were like, I was like, what else are you doing? You're just sitting around like acting like a tough guy at McDonald's or whatever. It's not going to work out. And I think 99% of those people that didn't want to challenge themselves haven't, you know? And it seems like there's a generation of people that have gone off to wars, especially in the last like 15, 16 years since 9/11, right? That are coming back with a different viewpoint to everybody else, right? And that's one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you, because when I start talking about stuff, I know I almost kind of, I censor myself, man, because I can't talk to people because they almost kind of have to like...
In case you offend them.
Well, I don't want to offend them. That's the thing. I don't want to offend them. But if I'm telling you what I think and it's not what you think, a lot of times if I censor, you'd be like, okay, that's what you think, man. You know, you kind of let it roll off. But it gets stuck in people's throats all the time. They're like, oh, I don't understand. I can't deal with someone's opinion that's not my own. It's like this echo chamber weird shit. Now, with these podcasts, I'm trying to talk to different people with different perspectives that actually talk about different things. Now, you talk about the cotton wool thing. Now, when you go talk to the young people around this country, what do you see with it as far as that? Do you think them see them actually trying to understand where other people are coming from, or do you think they're shutting down a lot?
It's a bit of a mix, I think. You know, some do, some don't. It's the main thing I try and get across to, you know, kids, especially when I go talk to them, is that the world isn't, you know, as he says in Rocky, all sunshine and rainbows. This is the reality. You know, life can be tough. And then I try to let them know that I know they deal with their own adversity in different ways. A lot of these kids come from broken homes, you know, poor upbringings and that kind of stuff. And they're young. Some are like 5 years old, up to 16. You know, but I try and say to them, I get it. To a degree, you know, we all face adversity differently, but you just gotta get up and get on with it, you know, and don't be soft and don't be wrapped in cotton wool.
It also seems like it wastes a lot of time because, you know, I guess eventually everybody kind of sees what it's about, but sometimes that's, you know, after the whole, all the fun when you're young, you can get away with shit,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Because the whole thing I always thought was, I thought I was actually blessed that I could get away with jumping out of planes and swimming in the ocean,
exactly,
running through the desert, being up in freaking the Arctic or whatever it was, because that's like, you know, you think, oh, man, I had a good day today, man. What'd you do? I did some crazy shit. Mm-hmm. But I never thought I'd do sitting around the Lower East Side of Manhattan and, you know, hanging out trying to put nickel bags of pot together to try to sell and make money. It's dumb.
It's funny because even, I mean, one of the sayings you get in the Royal Marines, it constantly gets drummed into you, particularly when you're in training. When one person starts moaning, you know, say it's 3 o'clock in the morning, you've been yomping across Dartmoor for 4 days, and someone's like, "This is shit." The training team, the guys training you, they always turn around and say, "Shut the fuck up. Civvies will pay thousands to do this." And you don't get it until you just say what you say. You get to jump out of planes, it doesn't cost you anything. You get to go to the Arctic, it doesn't cost you anything. You get to do all this stuff, go, you know, whatever, and you do it for free, and it develops you as a person. But civilians do have to pay thousands for it, and you get it for nothing.
That is brilliant. A great idea. Yeah, you see all this, like, I guess in the last couple of years, you see, like the boot camp, like, gyms.
Yes.
And they make me laugh, because, you know, I mean, there's some guys that are running it that, you know, obviously have to pull a lot of it, but they're, like, you know, old forces dudes, like, I guess, drill instructors, whatever, and they're just, you know, see them kind of hammering, you see them kind of look off in the distance, like, oh, I remember I could probably put my foot in the back of this dude's neck.
Yeah.
But, yeah, civilians would still do, I guess, you know, I haven't jumped in a lot of years since I've been married, because my wife doesn't think that I'll be good at it now.
Okay.
Cause you know how wives are. Like, you did it before I met you, but I don't know about right now. But you do see, like, a lot of the like the old forces dudes getting into doing, like, stuff for civilians, like the boot camp stuff, and then like the adventure training and all that
survival
kind of stuff.
Training.
Yeah, the survival training, like that, the zombie apocalypse kind of stuff. Yep. There's this dude, what's his name? Some American Marine guy. Rudy Reyes or something like that, and,
okay,
and he did like this TV show about like how to avoid the zombie apocalypse.
Oh, really?
It's just funny because he's like, he's a Marine, so he's just kind of like rolling his eyes and a lot of stuff. Like, if the zombies come this way, you know, he's just showing you squad tactics, which is kind of interesting. Now, when you work out, what was the music that got you charged when you were, like, saying jumping out of airplanes or getting ready to go on a mission or something like that? Because we had, you know, the I guess back, I'm dating myself, I'm 49, but I see a Metallica tattoo. But it's like, you know, I had a Case Logic cassette, but like 12 cassettes, and I always had like a bunch of cassettes, and that was my my go-to tracks.
I don't think I got not specific go-to tracks, and this is weird. It really doesn't fit, I don't think, with me when you look at me. But when I was growing up and I first started getting into fitness about 12, 13, for some reason I gravitated towards rap music, like the hardcore stuff, the NWA and that kind of, and that's kind of stuck with me now, you know, more of the modern stuff though.
Yeah.
And that's what I train to, you know, proper hardcore gangster rap kind of music, which people, I think, are a bit shocked by when they hear that.
I mean, I you know, I grew up around that stuff too. To me, that's motivational music, man.
Yeah.
Because you hear some serious situations and some guys in South Central LA fucking the police and whatnot, and I think I get with that. I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
Man. Yeah. I listen to that stuff too a lot when I'm trying to train and stuff like that. That motivates me.
Yeah.
It gets you through it, man. Plus, it's loud and annoying. If you play it really loud in the gym, everybody else kind of leaves you alone. So.
Yeah, no, people, when you try and take over the speakers, put up your music on, they're like,
But I go to this one gym, right, that's near my house, and it's part of, like, the Soho House thing.
Okay.
And you go in there, and, you know, it's pretty, like, I go in there in the mornings after I drop my kids, because I'm lucky enough not to have, like, a regular job, so I can kind of go fuck around. And I go to the gym, and it's always, like, you know, like, I guess pop music playing. I just can't deal.
I can't
get a sweat with pop music going. Like, so I at first I was talking to the lady who, like, kind of, like, is supposed to watch it, and I just kind of just stick my phone in. But, yeah, people get really annoyed when it's not, like, nice. I guess, I don't even know who pop music is now. Like Rihanna or something like that.
I think they have to put on some generic stuff to please everybody.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can't be too...
I think we struggle with the radio in the car, don't we, sometimes, when we're... some of the shit we don't get these days.
Well, all I do when I'm not with Matt, when I'm on my own, I'm audiobooks, podcasts, all the time. But when we're travelling around,
he plays Metallica all the time.
No, I couldn't tell you one
Master Puppets
song.
Guys,
no, but we laugh at this all the time, don't we? We do it on the way up here. What were we saying on the way up here? We ended up talking about art for some reason, mm-hmm. about how it's subjective and what one person sees and another doesn't. And I said about music, and I said, you know, back in the day when there's proper music like Sinatra and stuff, mm-hmm. and now you turn the radio, I can't even understand what the fuck some people are saying.
Yeah, that just I'm in that game, right? And I don't listen to a lot of that new music because I can't. It seems to me like, remember Demolition Man, that movie with Sylvester Stallone?
Yeah.
When it was Sandra Bullock was like the future girl, right? And he was in her car, and like, ooh, this is my favorite song, and it was like a jingle for something.
Johnny Green Joy. Yeah, right.
So to me, that's what it sounds like. Everything's kind of like evolved into like these little kind of hooks that just repeat themselves a lot, and you're kind of like, and they're like earworms, right? You get in, people go, oh, that's a great song. It's like, why? Because I can't forget it. That doesn't mean I had Britney Spears stuck in my head one time. Yeah. It wasn't it was good. It was that it got in there, it wouldn't let go.
Yeah.
And all these like mumble rappers too, because I like rap where you can hear what someone's saying.
I couldn't understand what he was saying.
Yeah, well, that defeats the purpose of hip hop. It's a communication tool, right?
Yeah,
like, NWA, they might be from some crazy place, but you understand exactly what they're saying. Mm. They enunciate.
Telling a story.
Yeah, exactly. And now it's kind of like, I don't know what it's like, man. No. It's like ADD. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, people don't have, I guess, the time to listen to music the way they used to. Like we said, proper music, you buy a record, right? And it was like an album, and you spent your allowance to get it. And if you didn't get it,
that's what we said. That's what we said.
And if you didn't get it,
appreciated it.
Yeah, exactly. Oh shit, man! You put the record on, you'd be like, all right, cool. The band's favorite song was side two, track one. Mm-hmm. You know, because that's how you do it. But that was the idea. Like, you actually invested time and effort to enjoy something like art. Like, even if it's like a painting or some shit. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. This is my theory that is over the last, I guess since the internet really came in, everything's really turnover so quick, like even with news and things like that, mm-hmm. that we've been kind of programmed almost to not invest that much into. Well, I mean, look at like a Metallica record, right? They actually spent a lot of time, years, putting that record together, sequencing it, doing it, putting the artwork on the album, mm-hmm. and all that shit. Whether you like it or not, it's a piece of art, right? And now, you know, someone comes out with a record and it's not an album, it's just a bunch of songs featuring other people, produced by a bunch of different guys, written by a bunch of different people. It doesn't have a whole coherent idea behind it. It's just trying to get in the charts, because even if you get in the charts, it's not buying the record anymore, it's streaming it. Or like, you know what I'm saying? So if you go on like Spotify and stream it like 20 times, that's considered a buy.
Yeah.
And when I was coming up, if you sold a record, you got paid, right? And if you sold a record now, you don't get paid. They have these things called 360 deals that if you sign a record contract, they'll take the record sales, they'll take your publishing, which is usually yours, they'll take your touring, and they'll take your merchandising and literally anything else they can get. I think that's kind of like, it's a good kind of way to look at how society's gotten kind of fucked up, right? Where all the stuff that used to mean a lot to us, we've been kind of incrementally moved away from those things, right? And now it's just kind of, everything's just kind of, I don't think I'm quoting a dude wrong, but he was one of those French dudes that was talking about postmodernism, and like, I'm not big on that shit, but I saw something on the internet about this shit, and it's like the whole idea for postmodernism is to break down everything that we love.
Right.
And you're left with nothing. Mm-hmm. And like, there you go.
Yeah.
I'm done. And it's like, no, that's bullshit. That's not what life's about. It's about enjoying literally every freaking minute, right? And I think it comes back to like, I guess guys like us that have decided to kind of, you know, pick up a sword, and for lack of a better term, and be those kind of guys, and seeing our brothers fall and stuff like that, knowing that every minute's a blessing, and that's ingrained in you. And you know, I'm not saying we're the dinosaurs here, but I think if anything, we're the smart ones that we pay more attention to.
Yeah,
you know, and I think that's a lot of the reason why I wanted to kind of connect with you, and even this dude.
Taken away because it's, I don't know if you saw in the Marines the other day, there's a few things in the paper, and one of them was about how we like to cross dress when we're.
Yeah, well,
and apparently now they're clamping down on that, a naked bar as well. Right? And now they're saying they're taking this away from, and that's the whole part of being a Marine.
Well, it's all these little things that make the whole thing the thing. And then once you start marginalizing little types, you can't dress as women anymore. It's like, well, you know, I was going to get drunk tonight. I wasn't planning on dressing like a woman.
But it might happen.
But it might. Now it can't. So you fucking with that. You know, so these little things.
Start taking it away,
And even dumb shit. I mean, I don't think when Marines dress as women when they're drunk, they're offending transgender people. They're not even thinking about transgender people. No. They're thinking about, that dress will look great on Bill. You know, that's how it goes, you know?
It's just a group thing. It's just, it brings the lads
It's just, yeah, it's a unique culture to a small, unique group of people. Yeah. So it's a bit of fun, a bit of bonding, and people just, you know, it annoys me that people get offended by that, because like you said, we didn't,
it's none of their fucking business,
it's not your business. We're doing it for us.
Yeah.
So don't be arrogant enough to think that it's anything about you. Yeah. Go away. Mm-hmm. Leave us to do what we want to do, you know, and everyone will be happy. Well, not everyone will be happy, because no one ever is.
When do you guys have jump wings when you guys go to jump training and stuff like that? Now, back in the day, you used to put them up there and get them jumped on.
Blood wings.
That's how it was, man. And now I've read something, literally, I think I read it like last week, where that's like, if you get caught doing that, it's like really bad. Like you could get court-martialed or at least stand in front of the man for some, you know, you'd be a freaking PFC again or some shit, you know.
It's crazy. You're supposed to be a soldier, yeah. And it's a little stab in the chest, you know. It's not a bayonet.
And you know, there's probably, you know, probably hurt more is landing last time you got the fifth jump that got you your silver wings. You
know? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know exactly what they, I mean, I was watching a movie with my wife when I was in America recently that, A Few Good Men.
Okay.
that pretty much is what I'm trying to say in a nutshell. That whole speech that Jack Nicholson puts up there. So you want to be safe. You want to afford all these luxuries and this free speech and being able to critique every motherfucking thing on the internet. How do you think that shit happens? Mm-hmm. You know, and that's what I think is important for people to kind of recognize that, you can hang out, talk shit about the country, and, you know, start fights at McDonald's. You can't wear a dress though if you're a Marine getting drunk. But these guys that go out and do all this stuff, they have to almost swim against the tide of society. And that's what I did. I think is the most important thing that I could take away from that movie. Anyways, like that stuff's important, man. You can't just curse masculinity, because that's what it is. I mean, also you look at history, right? You got the Greeks. They had like David up there looking all good there in the beginning, and then at the end of all these dudes with long hair, wishy washy and stuff. Mm-hmm. What happened to them? Yeah. Society failed. Mm-hmm. Same thing with Rome. First of all, it's like the Romans, yo, we're gonna fuck some shit up, and then hi, we're the Romans. I'm not saying that being that way is bad, but you gotta have everything in life. There's a spectrum of how human beings are, right? Mm-hmm. And once you start saying one thing's bad that people actually need to keep a society together, and also what society is, we all kind of make concessions to be part of this, right? We all say, okay, I can't punch people when I'm mad at them. Okay, I get it. I'll come to the travel lodge. You know what I'm saying? But we all make these small concessions. But then when all those concessions have to be addressed, it's like it's just endless, because I guess society as a whole has to marginalize people. You have to go, well, yeah, you can't be a serial killer and live in society, right? Well, that's an extreme version, but also you can't be someone who can't drive and have a driver's license. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And I know that's one of your pet peeves is driving, right?
How do you mean?
You said, I saw a tweet you had the other day where it was people in the fast lane, because you drive a lot, right? Yeah. See, I'm new to driving in this country. Yeah. I drive by the fucking book. Yep. I drive by the book. I'm like, in that lane, I'm on the wrong side of the road, wrong side of the car for me.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm just trying to do it, get through it, and live. And then you see these people just acting fucking willy-nilly, man.
It's crazy. It just, it drives me nuts. Like I drove 7 hours the other day to pick my bike up. It should have took me 4. And it was a Sunday, so I thought there's not going to be a lot of traffic. And got stuck in about 4 traffic jams purely because of those people that sit in the middle lane, switch their brain off, and then just cause all the tailbacks. Yeah, it's a pet hate of mine.
Well, I think it's also one of those things where it's like, that's where's your discipline? If you're operating a 2,000-pound piece of machinery in front of the people that could kill them, have your fucking head on. Mm-hmm. Swivel, man, you know?
Yep.
Get that shit going, you know?
I know, definitely.
I did want to talk to you guys about the film. So you guys are doing this together, right?
Yes.
Now, I have a friend out in California who does like movie production. I had him on the podcast. You should check him out. His name is Dana Brunetti. He's the Coast Guard guy I was talking about.
Okay, well,
He's a good dude, but he's out there as like the only sane man in Hollywood, which is it's really funny to see him operate. Like he produced Social Network, that movie about like Facebook, and he also did Captain Phillips.
Yeah. Okay.
He also did The 50 Shades of Grey, Brothers Gotta Make Some Money, and all that kind of stuff. But he's like one of those dudes that he's not politically correct.
Gotcha.
He's not. He's he. But he he operates in that world, and it's hilarious. You gotta see, you gotta follow him on Twitter. He's hilarious. He just chews people up, spits them out, and they're like, but he's like, but nothing. You can't say shit to me.
Yeah.
you know, which is, I think, great. I think more people should be kind of like solid in their boots.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's a dude I'd love to put you guys in touch with about this doc, because he does cool shit.
Okay.
And being an ex-service guy, even if it is the Coast Guard, he's still an awesome dude. So.
All right. That'd be awesome,
man.
If you don't mind.
Yeah, that'd be cool, man. That was one of the things I thought of initially. I was like, wow, these guys could, you know, kind of get together and do some talking. Because it's a thing that, you know, I don't know if I'm really accurate, but in the United Kingdom, it's veteran stuff, because they're not that many veterans.
Mm-hmm.
It's looked at as a positive thing. You see a lot of guys with the Help for Heroes bands and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And in America, it's not as... It's not as widely accepted that, like, this war has been going on, you know, and these people are, you know, these heroes of the nation, all that stuff should be, you know, treated well. So I think this kind of thing for him would be a great thing to get this documentary out in America.
What, you mean American veterans don't get treated as well?
Well, up until very recently with the new president, because he's actually trying to do stuff for the Veterans Administration and clear that up. There are dudes waiting years to be seen and stuff like
really?
That.
Really?
Yeah,
your veterans seem to get treated a lot better than
us. We thought it was the reverse, didn't we?
Yeah, no, I literally, when I go to America, I can't remember one trip in the last 10 years where I haven't had at least one meal paid for me anonymously. I've gone into a restaurant and someone's going to pay the bill and they've said, oh, someone's taking care of it.
Really?
And people shaking my hands, thanking me for my service. You don't really get that here.
Even like in an area that's, I guess, rich in, you know, service members?
There's been a great increase in this country in the last 10 years. But I think it's just a British thing, isn't it? You know, you don't really just walk up to people and go to a random stranger who you could tell has been in the military and go, thanks for your service. But you guys in America are a lot more open about it and, you know, friendly with it. And
we're more reserved, definitely.
Yeah.
I guess, okay, that's a good way to think. I never looked at it that way. I guess I never...
Yeah, no, I think the way we look after our veterans has increased dramatically in the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. There are guys from the Falklands and early Northern Ireland and stuff where I think they struggled a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only now, because of the massive media profile of it all and social media and everything, that those guys that have needed help are getting it now and getting looked after a lot better.
Do you guys have like a Veterans Administration over here?
We got what's called the Service Personnel and Veterans Agency. Yeah, but it's not as big as your VA, I don't think.
So it doesn't run hospitals and things like that.
No.
Do you guys have like naval hospitals and stuff like?
Not anymore.
We did have. Shut it down.
They closed it all down years ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, we have obviously the National Health, don't we?
Yeah.
So we're supposed to be priority cases with our local doctors and our hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
And I've not had any problems with it. I've been treated pretty well.
It's interesting to kind of see, because I did think it was the opposite, but you guys would know better than I would, man.
No, I think you got. I know a fair few veterans out in the States, and they get looked after really well.
Okay, well, dude, about this games thing, right? All right, so it's Canada, so it's what, 5 hours earlier, right?
It's 5 or 6.
Five.
Yeah. It's five. Yeah.
So that's New York, right? So what days are you competing first? You're doing the opening ceremonies, right? So that's the 23rd.
So if I remember rightly, we fly out on the 21st. Mm. Friends and family fly out on the 22nd. Opening ceremonies the 23rd. First day of competition is the 24th.
Really? No time for jet lag, huh?
Not really, no.
Fuck, man.
And on that 24th, from the schedule as it stands now, I'll be hand biking in the morning, doing a time trial event, and then late in the evening from about 7:30, 4 minute rowing race and a 1 minute rowing race, finishing about 11:30 at night.
Damn. In the same day?
Three events in one day. That's the toughest day I think I've got. And then the next day is the hand biking, what's called a criterion race, where it's just like wacky races, Mario Kart style. Everyone's on the track.
You're just going for it, yeah.
Yeah, going for it. And then the day after that, swimming. And the day after that, again, another swimming day. So it's, and then the closing ceremony, I think.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty much, from the first day right through the end, I'm competing every day.
That's going to be cool. So you could, where do you watch that? Is there
the BBC will broadcast it.
All right, cool. So everybody listening, be on the BBC. It's a good place to chill.
Yeah.
I can't talk about my radio shows on my podcast.
Okay.
Yeah, they're dope, I know, but I can't talk about it. No, we made an agreement.
Okay.
Yeah, so that'd be cool to see. And have you talked to the other team, other guys on your team about, like, you know, what do you think you guys are going to be taking care of there? You can coming home with some medals. And...
Yeah, I mean, we're hoping so. We've heard a rumor that the US team are putting in all their Paralympians or potential Paralympians this year. So they're really coming strong,
oh, really?
Wanting to get some medals. But, you know, we've been running camps consistently since they announced the team in all the different sports, and you know, everyone is committed, that everyone's been attending, traveling all over the country hundreds of miles every weekend, training in the different disciplines, so everyone's putting the hours in.
Do you guys know what other teams are doing time wise or like
this is the hardest thing for me is I don't know who's in my classification.
Yeah,
for, so I can't research people, and the best I've been able to do is go back to last year's results. Look at the people in my classification in my sports, see what times they got to get gold medals, and I've been aiming my training towards it.
I guess that's all you can do, right?
That's all I can do, yeah.
Now, I guess when you hit the ground, there's real no time for excuses, right? Or jet lag or bullshit like that. So I guess it's going to be a pretty hectic week for you, right?
Yeah, and I think when I get on those start lines now, it's a case of, I don't really care who I'm competing against. I don't care what they've done before. I don't care how good they are, or if they've got an elbow or two arms or whatever in there in my classification. It's just grit my teeth and go for it.
That's the Marine Corps way, right?
That's the brute force way. And ignorance. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's good. Brute force and ignorance. Well, dude, I'll tell you what, it's been good hanging with you, man. And I know you got to get back to training. I appreciate you taking the time to hang with an old Marine. And, you got an old Marine friend, so I guess you just
thank you for coming down.
No, dude, anytime. And good luck with everything. I'll make you a mixtape and for some hip hop.
Oh, sweet.
Put one together for you. All right, cool. Thank you,
awesome.
Dude.
Appreciate Thank you. It. Thank you.
That was pretty inspiring, huh? So I have some links you have to check out so you can tune in and support your veterans at the Invictus Games and follow Mark and making of his documentary No Limits as well. Check out InvictusGames2017.com for all the details on that. And head over to Mark's website, markomrod.com, to find out more about this dude. Sign up for his newsletter and all that good stuff, and follow him on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. Just search Mark Omrod, O-R-M-R-O-D. You can't miss this guy. Next week on Huey Off the Record, it's the one, the only superstar DJ, Matteo DeFontaine. If you ever saw Fun Loving Criminals gigs back in the day or recently, you've been lucky enough to be rocking at a Vanity Fair party for the Oscars or the Golden Globes or whatever. You'll know who I'm talking about. Matteo rocks all the decks everywhere. And even though he's one of the coolest dudes on the planet and probably has some pretty juicy behind-the-scenes stories that all the celebrities have been kicking with, the vibe on this pod is a little different. Matteo had some insane, life-changing shit happen to him a couple years back, and we get deep into exactly what happened to him and how he came through. Okay, so you can look forward to that one. In the meantime, you know what to do. Please leave us one of those nice 5-star ratings, and be sure to subscribe and spread the love. It's the Brooklyn way, yo. Until next time, stay classy.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands.
Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.